Welcome to another episode of Three Men in a War Game. I'm Paul, your host, and tonight I am joined by both Kevin and Chris. How are you guys doing?
Doing all right, Paul. How about yourself, man?
Oh, doing fine. Doing fine. It's a new year.
It is.
Yeah, how are you, chaps?
Also doing well. Cannot complain.
So, what we're going to talk about tonight, we're going to spend our time on one game tonight, instead of talking about all the news. We're going to start talking about Age of Sigmar.
Yeah.
Something that we've all been looking at and being interested in and are finally jumping in. So, in light of that, Chris, you want to tell us what Age of Sigmar is?
So, Age of Sigmar is GW's revamped edition of what used to be Warhammer Fantasy Battle. They went ahead and they finally advanced the storyline of Warhammer Fantasy Battle, you know, due to many reasons, but mostly from what I've been seeing is stale sales at their end. And so what they did is they blew up the world, and now we're fighting in what's called the Mortal Realms. There's a realm for each lore of magic from the old Warhammer Fantasy world. We've got a couple of new factions that they decided to join. They changed the Wood Elves into the Sylvaneth. It's all about druids and trees now, not elves. You've got the Sigmarines, also known as the Stormcast Eternals, which are basically space marines in Warhammer Fantasy. So that's kind of where it's at. It's no longer a brick regimented game. It's now a skirmish-based game, but it is still large scale. And they moved everything from square bases to round bases for it, and they changed it up. And I've actually, myself, I was skeptical of it, but I've actually been really enjoying it.
Anything to add to that, Chops?
No, I think that was great. I think the world was skeptical of it, right? The game seems to have, it's a year or so, maybe a little bit longer than a year to catch its feet. But people are starting to warm up to it, and I think GW sales prove that people like the game.
Yep.
And it moving to this new format and this new story, I think, has done them a lot of favors, including giving them their new edition of 40K, basically.
Yeah, 40K 8th edition is, there's a lot of Sigmar-esque rules that made it over that way. So
yeah, I think it's safe to say that General's Handbook 2017 or 2016 was a test bed for what they were planning for Warhammer 40K.
Yep.
It always seemed like there were things that 40K eventually got that they tested in fantasy, and I guess now that's a little easier. One of the things, you know, talking about it getting on its feet, one of the things that I played fantasy for many years, loved the game. Was a big Dark Elf fan back in the day. But one of the things that I had issues with when they initially launched was that they had a lot of silly rules to it. Longer beard and like the Hydra having to roll while staring at your opponent and stuff like that.
Oh, Age of Sigmar? Yeah.
Yeah.
Got rid of all that.
You're talking about the original battle tomes that first came out with it, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
That was a mistake, I think.
It was a mistake because If it was anywhere close to where it is now, I never would have been as hostile towards the game as I was. But when I opened up a battle tome and it was like, compare the length of your beard to your opponent's, I'm just like,
I think when the game first came out, I really think that they did want to change it more into that beer and pretzels. And you know, the new CEO over GW, I've talked to the local GW guy here. You know, it seems that they're big on this whole mantra of get stuff out. Just they want to oversaturate the market with their products. Hence why we're getting all these easy-to-build models and stuff out there. So I think what they were trying to do was to go with that of just get stuff out there and make it this beer and pretzel game. And the amount of backlash that they got from the community, I think, is what sparked the whole General's Handbook. And I know we'll get a little bit into that a little bit later. But that helped rein that back in, I think. And maybe GW did have it planned all along, and they just thought, like, let's throw this humorous stuff in here while we work on the competitive or, you know, more balanced aspect of the game in the background. And maybe it'll be humorous because they're British and who knows.
Yeah, I mean, it was enough of a turnoff to me that I sold all my Dark Elves.
You didn't light them on fire like that guy on YouTube?
Oh, man. Why would you set your little plastic men on fire?
They didn't deserve that.
They didn't. I think the conclusion to this conversation, though, is, though, right, like that, They launched Rocky, and I think now they've got a game. And the people who aren't still butthurt and bitter know they have a game.
Yeah.
And it's looking like it's a lot of fun, man. Like, I've played a couple games at this point, and my Escalation League actually kicks off this week, and I couldn't be more excited. Like, as we sit here and talk, I'm painting eyeballs on the ghouls.
Yeah, our Escalation League is starting this Sunday, actually, at the local GW. So I'm hoping to get a couple of games in there as well too.
Yeah, I might
That's
have
cool.
to.
We can have some cross country Escalation League comparison. That's exciting.
There we go. Yeah, I'm feeling that Age of Sigmar is going to consume our next couple of shows.
Yeah, I think it has firmly implanted itself as my secondary game. Like I have eyes for nothing but Malifaux and Age of Sigmar at the moment.
We were talking about the general handbook thing, right? Chops, can you explain the different types of play that general handbook introduced?
Sure. So the general's handbook brought in essentially narrative play, open play. They brought back some modes from previous things that people like, the treachery mode. But most importantly, what the general's handbook brought back was match play. And that's, as Potter was referring to earlier, that coming back to that competitive aspect. Without match play, they didn't have a competitive game because there was no real way to compare units. The only way they had to compare units prior to the General's Handbook was with wounds. And as you, I, or anybody who plays miniatures know, wounds do not make the model. So it just didn't work out, and it wasn't very balanced. It was. I think they had a fun game before the General's Handbook, but before match play, I think they didn't have a competitive game. Now they do. It is a tactically sound game. They have objective-based missions now. With the introduction of 2017, they also have open war cards, which allow you to essentially randomly generate scenarios for the game, randomly generate victory scenarios, and randomly generate deployment, and also twists that can happen in the match. So that, I think, covers the broad brushes of the General's Handbook.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Going on there, there's also open play and narrative. Potter, can you explain the differences between open play and narrative?
So open play is pretty much just what it means. It just means it's essentially what Sigmar launched as. Bring whatever you have and play with it. So, you know, if I've got some Stormcast Eternals, I've got some Khorne Bloodbound, and I've got some orcs, I can bring all that. That's my army. I put it on the table. Don't have to worry about point cost. Don't have to worry about anything. And my opponent puts down what he wants to do. It's open play. Essentially, it's a way for, I think the justification behind it is, back in the day it was, you know, I'll use the 40K mantra because I can't remember what fantasy was because it's been a long time since I played fantasy. But, you know, you 40K used to be one HQ, two troops. So you go to the store and you're like, oh, cool, I got these Space Marines and I want to play them. You build them and it's like, you go to the store, it's okay, where's your other troop choice and where's your HQ?
Right.
Now you can't play. So I think that open play goes, here's some rules, they're very loose, play with what you got and have some fun.
Yeah, and I think an important thing to mention here at this juncture is that even without the General's Handbook, Age of Sigmar is a game where I could look at my friend and say, hey, I've been looking at these cool miniatures for a long time. Let's go and look at the store and pick out what we think looks cool. Honestly, two people can go into a model shop, first time they've ever hobbied, if they're 13 years old, if they're 35 years old, they can walk into a store, each of them can buy a start collecting box, and they can put those miniatures together. The rules are free online, and the war scrolls are free online, and the war scrolls come in the start collecting box. So two people spend $75 a piece, a little bit less if you go online, and you can literally play Age of Sigmar. It's like the easiest point of entry, I think, of any miniatures game, and that's what open play is all about. They just want you to get your models on the table and start wrecking face.
Yep. So, and then narrative moves into that more of that realm of, you know, your typical D&D. You've got a story, you've got a campaign, you've got a narrative going to it. So, you know, whoever's doing it, there's a set of guidelines on how you can build around it within the General's Handbook, and then it allows you to develop your campaign, develop your story, and you can play, and you can put certain restrictions on it, like, you know, you have to take what you had before, or if this unit dies, you can't take that unit again because it died the last time. So it's that true kind of story aspect of building that campaign, which is really a lot of fun. You know, I used to do some of it back in the day. I know I did it when I first got back into Warhammer Fantasy Battle when I was 18. You know, it was back when, what is his name? The Chaos guy, starts with an A.
Abaddon?
No, not 40K, Fantasy. the guy that blew up the world to begin with from Chaos, I can't remember his name, but whatever it was, he was storming some city, and they had this whole big narrative campaign going. So that's essentially what it is like, you know, just build a story, craft a story, and play with it, and every week you build on that story.
So Here's what I wanted to expand on. Chops, one of the things that you mentioned were start collecting boxes. What's that?
So start collecting boxes. Every faction, well, almost every faction, they're working their way through every faction, is getting a start collecting box. So the start collecting boxes, you know, I think that at first they were just trying to toss a good value in a box, and they've become more focused now. But essentially what Games Workshop is doing is giving a value proposition to a new customer. And what they're doing is they're putting troop choice, sometimes a giant model, and I mean huge, 120 mil base model, and some supporting models, and essentially giving you a detachment that you can play and you can carry through. And they're doing it for really cheap. So I think what I looked at online is that an average start collecting box represents $150 value if you bought all the models separately. And that goes across all the start collecting boxes. Some of them are worth much more than that, like the Beast Claw Raiders, for example. I think their box is like $180 at retail. Yeah. You're still just paying $80 for it when you buy it. So that is a significant thing, and you are getting a ton of models. And if you're lucky and you pick the right faction, you can just buy lots of start collecting boxes and make a real valid army that way. But the real gist of it is you walk into any shop that's going to carry Games Workshop models. I'm not even talking about a Warhammer store. If you walk into any place that's got miniatures and paints, is a very good chance you're going to see start collecting boxes for Age of Sigmar. It's like their entry point, and it's the easy SKU for stores to carry.
Yeah, I know some of them, the Dwarf Fire Slayers and the Seraphon, start collecting boxes that are an $85 price point, and each of those ones have an $85 model in it.
Yeah, the Magma Droth, for sure, and then the Carnosaur. Yeah, those are both $85 models.
Yeah.
And the faction I chose, the Flesh Eater Courts, their box comes with a Terror Geist, which is a $65 model at retail. And then it also comes with a box of Crypt Horrors, which is $50 at retail, and a box of Crypt Ghouls, which is $35 at retail. So for about $80, I've got well over $125 worth of miniatures. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's fantastic, considering how long GW was criticized for ridiculous prices.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, it's funny, like, I have a friend who plays Malifaux with me, and he's always been critical of Games Workshop prices, and I was assembling my Terror Geist while we were, like, waiting for the Malifaux crew to show up, and he was like, Jesus Christ, man, that is a model I can see paying a lot of money for. And if you've got a jaded anti-Games Workshop gamer saying that kind of thing, like, you know you're onto the right business model.
That's just it. Like, if you can say, hey, here's a good deal, you know, that's something that they needed. They really needed to do that, because for so long it was just price creep, price creep, price creep, price creep. You know, so to see some advantages to buying their products is pretty awesome. So let's get into some of the structure of the game in general. You guys obviously know a lot more about the game in general than I do. Chris, can you explain how factions are laid out? Because I know every time I look, I see Grand Alliances, and it always confused me a lot when I was starting to look into it. So can you help me understand that?
Yeah, so the way that GW divvied up everything is essentially everything's broken out into four grand alliances. You're either order, destruction, chaos, or death.
Death.
Death is the last one. So within each one of those is pretty much when you're looking at your alliances within there, like order is elves, dark elves, Sigmar, Sylvaneth, and Seraphon, and dwarves. And I'll cover dwarves as a generic, since there's multiple dwarf factions. And you also have all the free people, which are the old Bretonians, the old Empire, and those kind of guys. A Grand Alliance is a conglomeration of people that are fighting for the same cause. They're just fighting for that side. So, you know, you Chaos, you've got you Khorne, your Nurgle, your Slaanesh. Now, they're all fighting for Chaos. So that's how they're breaking them up. And then so there's each different army is within that Grand Alliance, and that's how they broke it up. And you can get bonuses for taking certain models from one faction to the other faction in what's called battle tomes. It's what used to be like the detachments from 7th edition 40K. So that's kind of what they are. So they can give you extra bonuses for taking those certain models. Like I know one for the Sylvaneth and Stormcast that allows you to actually use your heals from your Sylvaneth onto your Stormcast models. So stuff like that. So that's how the different factions and the alliances are broken out.
Anecdotally, if you're all right, I'd like to throw in another really good example of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Go for it.
Yeah, so another really good example of those War Scroll battalions that combine multiple factions is the Iron Jaws Orcs and the Beast Claw Raiders. They have a battalion that goes together where it's all mounted units. And the example that it is this competition between the orcs and the ogres. So your units will get plus one to hit if they're also attacking a unit that the other faction is attacking, right? So you get to take both the orcs and the Beast Claw Raiders, but they do better when they're both attacking the same unit, which is hilarious because they're fighting to kill everything on the battlefield first for glory.
So then let me ask you this. Can you... So if you have, say, an army of all orcs and you have your battalions and there's a few, the example you just gave, Chops, of the Beast Claws and Iron Jaws working together, can you just be like, hey, my army's death and I'm going to bring skeletons and I'm going to bring ghouls and I'm going to bring...
100%. There's absolutely nothing in the rules. So there's a thing of keywords, and anybody who's playing the new 40K will be instantly familiar with keywords. But as long as your units have a keyword in common, they can play together, and all of the units under your Grand Alliance always have your Grand Alliance keyword. So Every death unit has Grand Alliance death, and every order has Grand Alliance order, etc., etc. So there's nothing stopping you from taking them together. However, the game does incentivize itself through those War Scroll battalions to focus in on one faction or another by giving you significant bonuses for taking them.
Right, every faction has a built-in bonus if it takes that faction.
If it's pure, yeah.
Right, yeah, so Stormcast have the Stormcast tag, but they also have the Order tag. So if every model in your army has the Stormcast tag, you'll get an additional bonus for taking it, that. And I think Stormcast is they get to put everybody up in drop pods, essentially.
Yep, and essentially how that works, too, for people who are curious and you're just stepping into the game, there are battle tomes, which are essentially codexes for the factions, and those will either be in there or the general's handbook or both, because not every faction has a battle tome at this point, but that's where you can find those bonuses if you want to see them.
So GW is doing a good job of getting them out. I think Nurgle just got theirs, and they've been out for a long time, so, and they're doing a good job of combining them all. Like, they're combining humans and demons for Nurgle, so they're and Stormcast had six books come out because they were all done slowly over a year, and then at the end they wrapped all of it up in one book, and so you're not having to go out and spend $100 and $200 on these books. You're going out and spending $40 on one book.
Here's the big question: what are you guys playing? What do you guys, since we're all just kind of getting into this, that's a big question, Chris. Go for it.
Go Chops, you started, go ahead, man.
All right, so I mentioned that I bought the Star Collecting Box for the Flesh Eater course, and I have a funny story here. As anybody who in my local area will tell you, I can be really indecisive. It actually took me going through two factions in Malifaux to settle on the faction I eventually played. I've had the same problem with Age of Sigmar, in that I started playing, I bought a Flesh Eater course box, and then I found out someone else in the Escalation was going to play Flesh Eater course, and they weren't a very experienced painter, and they're pretty easy models to paint up. So I decided to buy some Iron Jaws because I'm a degenerate. I can't help myself from buying models. So I had a Star Collecting Box for the Iron Jaws and for the Flesh Eater Courts. And I've waffled back and forth, and I actually decided to go with the Flesh Eater Courts anyway and just paint them in a very different scheme. So I have some Iron Jaws that I'm actually painting space wolves, and I'm calling them my Earth Hogs. So they're coming along slowly, and I'll try to get some pictures up on Twitter or something so that we can link them and you can see them, my Earth Hogs. And then my Flesh Eater Courts, which I'm painting essentially to look like Strigoi. If you Google Strigoi and you look at that gross, purpley red complexion, really ghoulishy, vampire-y looking thing, which is what the Flesh Eater Courts are.
Right.
They're essentially cannibals that are under the spell of a vampire ghoul king. And that is what I play, because I think it just sounds metal as hell. Just to go into it a little more for people that who want to jump into the lore here. So the lore behind the Flesh Eater Courts is that there is a ghoul king. The ghoul king is this ancient vampire that fell out of favor with Nagash, went a little crazy, and now he uses his sort of mind control, and this vampire thinks he's a noble lord still. he thinks he's like a good person and he's great and he's doing these great things. But what's actually happening is they're having delusions, and his delusion spreads to his subjects. So he might say to his subjects, we have to go hunting for food. We need to feast. And they might run out and they think they've come across this grand bounty of animals, and they're grabbing the animals and they're preparing them and having this great feast for all their people and all the peasants, but they're killing humans and they're cannibalizing and they're just eating anything. And they're these disgusting ghouls that don't realize what they are. And I just think that that story is metal as hell.
Yeah,
it's just super awesome.
I gotta admit, I was looking at those guys and now I'm just kind of like, huh, they seem right up my alley, and I missed that one. So have you played with them yet?
I have. I've played one game with the Start Collecting Box, and I'll be playing a bunch more on Saturday. Essentially, the Start Collecting Box, you get these three big bruisers who hit hard. You get 10 sort of Joe Nobody Schleb models, which are your standard ghouls. I'm planning on probably painting up 40 of them because I can do 10 at a time pretty quick.
Right.
But the centerpiece model you get is this Terrorgeist, which is like a giant undead-looking bat. And it is the model in the army. I mean, this thing is terrifying. When I played it, it almost destroyed the entire Sylvaneth Start Collecting Box by itself.
Oh, wow.
So it is awesome. And if you just Google this thing, the Terrorgeist, it is basically a decaying bat with, like, wings that are shredded with this awful vampire riding on the top of it. It's so great.
That's a nice centerpiece model, it sounds like.
Yeah, and the cool thing is, you can build it a couple ways, and the way that these things are costed, War Scroll Battalion. There's a War Scroll Battalion called the Ghoul King's Menagerie.
Oh, jeez.
You basically take a Ghoul King and four Terrorgeists.
Oh, my God.
Ouch.
Yeah, so awesome, right? Like, and that's the kind of, like, as a miniature collector, I, like, kind of, like, squeal with delight at the idea that I could paint four of these things and name them kind of like Daenerys names her dragons in Game of Thrones, right? Like, they give each one its own personality, and I'm really excited to do that.
Right. As long as one doesn't turn bad, right?
Yeah, fuck that.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
All right, so, Chris, what did you jump into?
So, I have a similar story to Chops there. So, when I first realized, I wanted to start getting into Sigmar, I was hemming and hawing, I always play dwarves. I always play the good guys. And so I was like, I'm going to try and stay away from it this time. And I was really drawn to the Stormcast. I really like their models. I know everybody really kills them because they're basically space marines and fantasy. But I absolutely love the models. But so I was just trying to stay away because I play space marines. I wanted something different. So I went with Khorne. I did Khorne Bloodbound. And I played a couple of games and realized, crap, I like shooting. An all melee army, not for me. So I ended up kicking those, selling those, and then the Caradhron Overlords came out. Fucking dwarves in steampunk ships that float and fly. I was yes, sign me up. I bought straight into them. Didn't know anything about them. Grabbed the book. They didn't have a Start Collecting Box at the time, but I was getting them as they were coming out and absolutely loved them.
I don't think they have one now either.
They don't.
I don't think so. I think they're one, because they're a brand new faction. They came out last February.
Yeah,
they were last February. So, and then this Christmas, I took the dive. I was like, I'm getting some Stormcast models. I signed up for local GW's Secret Santa, and I lucked out. Dude, somebody bought me their freaking Star Drake. $140
Jeez.
Model.
You made out.
That got it in there, and I was like, I'm done. It's the first dragon I've had. Fantasy is what started me when I was 12. I bought Lizardmen. I was 12 years old, and I have never owned a dragon. I was like, I'm done. I'm playing Stormcast because I've got a dragon now. So now I'm playing Stormcast.
Yeah, dragons are good. So have you?
So I've got that in the collecting box. So, and we're gonna be playing tomorrow.
I was gonna say, have you managed to play the Stormcast at all?
Not yet. All I got to play actually was Khorne. I never got my Caradhron fielded before I got the chance to start building these Stormcasts. So.
Before you decided you weren't a dwarf anymore, despite your long beard.
I'm a dwarf. They're still order. Caradhron are still order. Stormcast are order. And Caradhron actually have a Stormcast and Caradhron battle tome or war scroll.
Oh jeez.
So I can take them together.
There you go. Well, now you're set.
Yep.
And I think that the Caradon Overlords have the best model in Age of Sigmar, too. So.
Which one's that, Chops?
Which one?
The Ironclad.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, I mean, it's a giant ship. It's the only faction in all of fantasy ever that actually is a troop transport. Those things carry troops, and you can deploy them, get out, and run and shoot. I mean, the Caradon are very good. I like them.
Yeah, they're cool. How about you, Paul? How about you talk?
Oh, yeah. Okay, my turn. So back in the day when I was a fantasy nerd, absolutely adored fantasy, probably even more than 40K at times. There's just, especially, what, 6th edition? I was playing a game against High Elves, and I was playing Dark Elves, and literally had my dragon. And at that point, you could finish combat and end up in combat with another unit. So over the course of 2 or 3 turns, my dragon ended up just going through this back line of High Elves and just literally gobbling them all up. With the Dark Elves, though, I really, really, really got into the fluff. And to me, one of the best things about them was how much they went and hated the High Elves, right? So, and it was cool because it reflected the relationship between, I'm a history nerd as well. So it really reflected the history.
You're just a nerd.
I know, but I'm a big history nerd. It's what I did in college. So, as I was saying, it reflects the difference in perspective between England and the United States on the American Revolution, right? So, you know, if you're from the States and you go through school, you're going to spend a lot of time talking about George Washington and, you know, all of those things related to the Revolutionary War. And you look in British textbooks and they're like, yeah, we used to have colonies in North America, but we don't anymore. And on they move, right? So when you would look at these old army books for fantasy and the Dark Elf, the whole thing would obsess over the High Elves and how awful the High Elves were and how they betrayed and all this other stuff. And then you would get into the High Elf book and it would be all these great things that the High Elves were doing. And they would mention this one little bit about this other faction of elves that moved across the water and they didn't really deal with anymore. And they're just kind of jerks. So it's I always liked that aspect of it, that it reflected that. So, long story long. So as they switched into Age of Sigmar, somewhere along the lines, the High Elves and the Dark Elves made up. And as a true Dark Elf believer, that just didn't float with me. So I got rid of those. So I've spent the past couple months hemming and hawing, much like Chops did, about what I was gonna get. And originally, I was going to go Ogres, the Beast Claw Raiders, because I figured, you know, like, their Start Collecting Box is 6 models, that's awesome, nothing to worry about, paint a few models and be done with it. But I started looking at the Seraphon and decided that giant dinosaurs and walking lizards was the way to go. So,
dude, hell yeah, Aztec lizards, man.
Yeah, man. And cooler than that. And, you know, when you look at the Start Collecting Box, I mean, what a deal. It really is. I mean, that Carnosaur is a huge, huge, beautiful model. It's like the type of model that you look at and you just go, wow, this is well-designed.
And I got to tell you guys, my wildest hopes, man, because of the Seraphon story, how awesome would it be if they became a Xenos race in 40K? Oh, my God.
Oh, I know. That would be amazing.
And they've been alluding to that for years, and they've never touched on it again.
And it works, too, right? Because the Seraphon in 40K are actually like, they're essentially like planeswalkers from Magic, right, or whatever. They're like actually floating through dimensions and space traveling or whatever.
Yeah, well,
it's not out of the realm of possibility. I mean, GW did say orcs in fantasy and orcs in 40K are the exact same orcs.
Well, yeah, and in the 40K fluff, it was heavily hinted that the Eldar visited the Lizardmen way back in the day, and those were the old people or whatever they used to call them, the old ones.
The old
or,
gods.
Yeah.
Oh God. Yeah, God, that would be so awesome.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you
it's
know,
definitely not out of the realm of possibility.
And
but, yeah.
I was reading through their fluff the other night, and their fluff is really cool because they don't necessarily really exist. You know, they're just kind of the Slann are there, and the, you know, they're like these great giant wizards, and basically they're pissed off at chaos, and they just show up. They just summon all these creatures, basically out of this celestial power. and wherever they're needed, they show up and fight off chaos.
And I think as like a hobbyist too, that makes like them one of the most fun armies to buy, because really you're playing as the Slann's interpretation of what the people once looked like.
Yep.
So you can paint them however you want, right? And you're just saying like, this is how my Slann interprets my guys to look. and it just gives you like total license to paint them however you want. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, I'm gonna have to read that, because I so, you know, Lizardmen was my first army I picked up in fantasy probably back in 6th or 7th edition fantasy, and I really like the whole spawning pool aspect of it, you know, that basically depending on the needs of the army, that's what was spawned. You know, if you needed more Saurus, the spawning pools, that's what spawned. If you needed more Croak Hunter and stuff like that, like that's the kind of stuff that I really like. This, so now knowing that's just the Slann going, I'm just gonna summon a bunch of stuff that it's what I think it looked like, I don't know, for me that's a little disconnected, disjointed from what it used to be, and I will hold on to the old curmudgeon part of that for that one.
And I mean, the other thing too is like there's a great little story in there where they talk about a Lizardman. It's basically from the point of view of a Saurus warrior who's being attacked by a one of your flesh ghoul guys, and I guess it's one of the vampires, and she bites him thinking that she's going to suck on his blood, but just this ethereal light comes pouring out of him. You know, and she's just like, oh, I can't feed off of that. And, you know, he proceeds to bash her head in. I mean, it's just, you know, my type of story without getting into, you know, a straight up vampire and evilness. So it's like, even though it's a good guy, it still fits what I like.
Cool. Yeah, I dig it. It's a good choice.
Yeah. I'm
easy to paint, too. You can paint him up quick.
Well, I don't know. I mean, mine's taken me a good bit, but the red and black is working pretty well, I think,
man,
so far.
You got that Carnosaur basically painted in a couple days.
yeah, I mean, I put maybe about 2 hours of work in it, and now it's just kind of like shading and stuff like that, and then the guy on top.
I have 28 millimeter tiny little models that took 7 hours. So you got a full paint job on that thing in a couple hours. That's badass. I
like it. Yeah, it was kind of exciting.
Ain't no shame in the game either. That's why I'm buying the Custodians, man, because I want some dudes that are just gold.
Well, that's Sigmar, man.
Well, that's
my paint scheme's not the traditional Sigmar paint scheme, but it's still just one solid color for the armor and some couple of accents. Boom, you're done.
Yeah, I painted the Sigmar dudes for Shadespire, and they were a blast to paint. They look really good, so...
Yeah, that's what's on my painting table right now, is Steelhearts right now.
Yeah, dude, 80 points in Age of Sigmar, and they're good.
They're 100 now.
Oh, are 100. They?
Yeah, the 2017 General's Handbook bumped them up to 100.
They were probably too good at AD. But they're awesome.
And that's one of the nice things that they're doing with these general handbooks and I guess the chapter approve even for 40K is being able to, I guess, do what Privateer Press is trying to do and have dynamic updates.
Yeah, they're trying to be really agile. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but like Zinch is catching the Nerf bat on Friday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, their book's not even out yet.
Mm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but like they showed this is not AOS related, so I'll not spend long on it, but they showed a match with them, and people were interpreting the rules that they were using as what's coming out in the new Zinch 40K codex, and they're like Magnus is getting a big nerf, and there's other units that are getting nerfs too, just because they are so powerful. But I think that's what's great, right, is that GW now is like being really agile with their errata and making sure that the metas don't get clogged up with, you know, one army or whatever. I think that's really great, especially for a company that's got a model range as big as Games Workshop. It's really impressive.
Yep.
And I think a lot of it also has to do with the fact that they simplified the rules system for all of their games, and they're really only focusing on two games right now. Like, you know, during the what I'll call the dark times of GW, you know, you had The Hobbit and Lord of Rings. You had both those games. You had, you know, 40K bloated beyond reason. You had fantasy bloated beyond reason. Mm-hmm. All of them had completely different rule sets. Now that they're pretty much not focusing on The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings, that's more of a Forge World thing, and 40K and Sigmar have very similar rule sets, I think they can balance things a lot faster, a lot easier for their development teams.
Yeah, I like what they're doing. And, you know, And I'm going to be the first person to admit that, like, let me, and maybe you guys don't agree with me, but Age of Sigmar and Warhammer 40K are dumb. They're dumb. Stupid games, but they're fun, right? It's like, you know, I love Pacific Rim. I don't care that Pacific Rim is a dumb movie. It's fun as hell to watch. And that's how I feel about 40K and Age of Sigmar. Like, you know, if I want to get crunchy and I want my analytical brain engaged, I'll play Infinity or Malifaux. Mm-hmm. But if I want to slap my dick on the table and wave it in someone's face, I want to play some Age of Sigmar, man.
And that's just it. Like, I don't understand. Like, match play is probably going to be where I spend most of my time, but I can't imagine being hardcore competitive in Age of Sigmar. And I'm sure people are, but like, if I want to, you know, be super competitive, I'm going to go to Guild Ball.
Sure, yeah, you know? And that's what it is. You go to a smarter game, a game that's got like a smarter set of rules. I don't know. Maybe smarter is not the right word, but just a more comprehensive set of rules, right?
Yeah.
Not necessarily bloated, but something that requires a different level of tactical decision making,
mm-hmm,
than either of these two games. But that's not, I don't mean to sound demeaning to these games, because they're really good. The models are great. I think Games Workshop as a company is doing the right thing on all fronts. And I'm saying all these things, and you know, I want to get on this show and be really excited because I want people to play this game. Like, it's really cool. And like, I'm excited to like play with everyone, right? Like, I could play with my wife, I could play with my dad. You just like, it's really easy to teach someone the rules. It's very simple.
Yep.
And you just put a fistful of D6 in their face, have a drink, and have a good time. It's really good.
Yep. I agree. And that's just it. Like, you know, as I've been getting back into 40K and stuff, sometimes there's just something sexy about all those models on the table.
Oh yeah, man. Oh yeah. Yeah. And I've been talking to a couple of my local guys about having like once a month having a beer hammer night. So we'll just meet up at someone's house and like on a Saturday at, you know, early time, and have a bunch of beers, mm-hmm, and just get belligerent and roll dice.
Yeah, that's a good time, and that's exactly where the Games Workshop games need to be. You know, and
I can't play Malifaux drunk.
No.
But you could. It would be just a completely different experience.
Good God. I can't imagine trying to keep track of two strats in
a club.
I'd just be like, well, what triggers do I have? These two moves back, man. I can do a different thing. Like, I'd just be terrible at it.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that would...
I think we invented a new sport.
Drunken Malifaux? Jeez. Drunkfaux.
Yeah, Drunkfaux, man. That sounds hard. I have a hard enough time keeping my shit straight sober.
Right? No, it's
anyway,
yeah.
Back on track.
Back to Age of Sigmar, yeah. All right, so I know we're kind of getting close to the end of our time here. So what do you think, after you've played some games, is going to be your favorite thing about Age of Sigmar? Go ahead, Chops.
I anticipate that my favorite thing about Age of Sigmar, because I'm a person, like, I like to, like, gently rib and talk shit and laugh, and like, this is the kind of game, like, even at a higher points count, you can play, like, I don't know that it'll ever go above 1500 points, and you can play a 1500 point game in about an hour, and if you're salty about the way it went, you can just re-rack it and play again, and like, bad shit's gonna happen because dice are dice, right? And it's just, mm-hmm, I think my favorite thing about the game is going to be like the jubilation of awesome dice rolls and the crazy things that'll happen.
All right, Potter, how about you?
I don't know. I mean, because I've gotten to play a couple of games already. You know, walking into it, I think combat surprised me as one of my favorite aspects of the game. It was, at the time, it was different, but now playing several 40K games since 8th edition's coming out, where their system is very similar, still a little different. I may not feel that way as playing more Sigmar. The other thing, probably the hero phase. I am looking forward to that, where it's a little bit more consolidated and making those heroes feel more heroic. Like, they're going to do big things that are going to impact your actual army. Like, I'm looking forward to that.
A bit of hero hammer.
That's so true.
Old school hero hammer.
Yeah, I mean, we're going back to the days where, like, heroes mattered.
Yeah.
You know, or as I say, 4th edition Space Wolves, where it was just it's UPS. Get your Wolf Lord into combat.
Right. So now let me ask you this real quick, just as a comparison here. Does Age of Sigmar have the you can't target heroes rule like 40K?
I don't think so.
Okay. I didn't remember seeing that. I haven't seen
there
people talk about
it. There is a character targeting rule. It's just not nearly as bad as... I don't have the rules up in front of me, so I can't recall it right now. But it's not nearly what's going on in 40K right now.
Okay. That's probably a good thing.
Yes. Yeah, General Handbook 40K kind of made that
worse than it was.
Well, interesting.
Well, yeah. Wait, oh man, wait till I get my gold boys.
Yeah, they don't care.
Yeah. Great. That'll be interesting.
Well, you know those are getting added into my Blood Angels too.
As I said today, man, they're a plexiglass hammer. They're tough, but you can shatter them.
Yep. Yeah, but you got to get through them, right? All right, well, let's call it there because I believe we're all going to be playing some Age of Sigmar this week, and we'll be able to report
back next week or whatever, two weeks from now, and then actually talk about our battles.
Yeah, exactly. Two weeks will give us plenty of time to get some games in because you said you're already in your Escalation League chops, and ours is starting, and Potter and I are playing tomorrow.
We are playing tomorrow.
Yep.
Kind of a exhibition game.
That's right. That's right.
Again, I've got two Start Collecting boxes, and then I also have, again, Degenerate. I've got more orcs that I have to build, and I'll probably be buying another Start Collecting box of Flesh Eater counts and putting these models together so that I can play with my wife and my father when he comes over.
Thanks for joining me again, and next time, hopefully, we'll have some Tales of Glory in the Age of Sigmar.